Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
And what did happen? Okay. You see, we did crash. It was on this crazy island. And we waited for rescue, and there wasn't a rescue. And then there was a smoke monster. And then there were other people on the island. We called them the others. And they started attacking us. And we found some hatches, and there was a button you had to push every 180 minutes or... Well, I was never really clear on that. But the others didn't have anything to do with the hatches. That was the Dharma Mission. They were all dead. The others killed them. And now they're trying to kill us. And then we teamed up with the others because some worse people were coming on a freighter. Desmond's girlfriend's father sent them to kill us. So we stole their helicopter and we flew it to their freighter, but it blew up. And we couldn't go back to the island because it disappeared. So then we crashed in the ocean, and we floated there for a while until a boat came and picked us up. And by then, there were six of us. That part was true.
I came on a plane.
What plane?
A Jira Flight 316. And that's how I returned to the island.
So, why him?
What was it that was so wrong with me? What about me?
What about you?
Hello and welcome to The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast for Season 6, Episode 4, The Substitute. This week's question: what subject could you substitute teach? It says could, much like we've learned with Rose, just do the job that you could actually do. Let's not shoot very high, which is why I'm Dave Gonzalez. And does this high school have media studies? Because that's my only qualified subject.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and if I had to substitute teach something with no notice, on a whim, I would do theater, because I can do like theater games all day long. No problem.
And I'm Neil Miller, and if I were to substitute teach any subject, I would want to be the teacher that observes and oversees recess and lunch. Because I feel extremely qualified to lord over lunch. And as far as I can tell, that person just sits there and like reads all day. That seems fun. That's more fun than having to talk to kids.
Like, so like when you see something at recess, but it's like a distance away, you don't have to hustle over. You can just whistle.
I either have to get a whistle or learn how to do that, like really high pitched whistles that like with your thumb and forefinger that only, for some reason, PE teachers can do.
If a substitute shows up at my elementary school and it is Neil with his glorious hair and beard and he just lifts two pinkies up to his mouth and whistles all the way across recess, I'm not stepping out of line.
Oh my God, yeah. The dream.
But I would be cool after that. Like, I would be chill.
Oh, yeah.
They would just have to not be shits for
a
while.
Very intimidating. You just you don't want to piss off the recess lunch Mr. Miller, because He's got control over all your spare free time.
Our school would be so great. And I would always throw away the old coffee thing and put a new one in the coffee machine in our teacher's lounge.
I mean, if I'm working at this school, there's never a time period in between coffees.
It's
so
true.
Just going to constantly be rotating. If this is your first time joining us, welcome. This podcast is an ideal companion if you're rewatching the ABC series Lost with us or visiting the island and flashing sideways for the very first time, because each episode comes in sections for your listening pleasure. First, there's a calm section that only discusses the preceding episodes, which at this point is most of the episodes, and avoids all spoilers. Then there's a second section called The Storm. It's a storm of spoilers, discussing this week's episode in the context of the entire series and over a decade of Lost fandom. Do we know more about the cave in the storm than we do in the calm? Who knows? If you want to look down at your podcasting device, you can see time codes for the calm, for the storm, for revisiting, for skipping. Do as you please. Uh, you You are the master of your own domain. You have your own cave here in the podcast. For the final season of Lost, you might have noticed we've shifted to releasing the podcast on Saturday evening in the U.S. after our group live watch and our Storm Slack. How do you join the live watches with us, you ask? Why? You could go to patreon.com/stormofspoilers. There you will find ways to subscribe to us for a monthly fee. And depending on what level you choose, you get more and more bonus content. For instance, if you are part of our $10 level, you are in the Secret Movie Club, which means when this episode comes out, which again is on Saturday, like I just said, after our live watch of The Substitute, tomorrow on Sunday, we will be watching what, Joanna Robinson?
Oh, we'll be watching a movie. Is that right? Is this the right weekend?
Yeah. And it's an Elizabeth Shue movie.
Okay. Sorry, just trying to figure out what day and time we were in. Yeah, we're watching Elizabeth Shue movie. I knew which movie it was because we actually have an email about it. So I'm going to read the email that we got about this movie we're watching for a movie club. Okay. So yeah, if you're in our Slack and if you're at a certain level, you can watch this movie that Dave has picked with us. We talked about it last week on the podcast and we got an email from one of our longtime listeners, Jeff, who wrote, "Please read this in a Chicago accent, Joanna," but I'm not going to. "As revenge for saying Adventures in Babysitting takes place in New York, it's in Chicago. I know correction emails are lame, but I'm an Illinois native, and I couldn't sit and let this crime go by. NYC gets enough movies. Let us have this. A brief fun fact is a cousin of mine was a stunt double in the film. No idea in what scenes. Anyway, as an added punishment, I'm going to also reveal that I was 11 when Lost premiered. Take that." Ha ha! Go Cubs, Jeff from Chicago.
Aw, oh, boo. Boo Cubs.
P.S. The doc scene 100% should not have been cut. Not sorry, Dave. So that's Jeff from Chicago.
Wow, Jeff. Just like...
There's a lot going on in Jeff's email.
Just Jeff just stepped in to kick us back into line.
But I also think that we are on the record as being big fans of Chicago.
We are. No.
As recently as a few podcasts ago.
I love that email from Jeff. I thought it was in great good fun, so I was a big fan of it. Okay.
I don't remember who misinterpreted it to New York, but I'm going to guess it was me.
Oh, and no, probably me.
It was almost entirely based on the scariest bus stations I've been in my life are in New York. So that's what happens.
It's so funny that Jeff says, like, "A New York gets enough movies, let us have this," when, like, aren't all the John Hughes movies in Illinois? Shermer, Illinois? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think so.
I learned that from Jay and Silent Bob, I think, or something like that. Okay. So if you, like Jeff, have a bone to pick with us about Chicago or anything else, you can email us, hostsstormpodcast.com. You can check out what we're watching and when we're watching it over at our old website. And by old, I mean current website, stormpodcast.com. You can follow us on Twitter at stormpodcast. We've got a new social media person. They are crushing it. And then you can always leave us reviews. We like those. We got a couple new reviews this week. I'm going to start with our negative-ish 1-3 stars. "Guess we're not going to Guam" is the title of the review. "I love when they talk Lost, but the constant trigger warnings and mentions of problematic plot lines, characters, and religious themes takes me out of the podcast. Talking Lost theories is more fun than postmodernist theories. You do you, but that is my opinion." I mean, this is from Will. You are entitled to your opinion, Will, but it is wild of you to think that a Lost podcast would not talk about religious themes.
I feel like there's also at least 40 minutes of content of what he's talking about every week. So, you know, just maybe listen to it at 1.5 times speed or something.
Oh, my God. I'm sure I sound unbearable at 1.5 speed. Okay. This one, 5 stars from Did It For The Likes, who titled this review 4 billion beans because I crack up every time I hear you three say it, making me the neighborhood crazy lady walking her dog. "It is simply delightful to re-engage in this show with these three hosts. I first started watching Lost in high school when it first aired. While all my friends are watching MTV, I was obsessed with finding freeze frames to Lost mysteries, and I still believe Lost was the reason I got an A in AP Calc." Okay, great. I don't know how. Okay. It is my all new right. favorite
oh,
show.
Oh, no, I know how. Go okay. ahead.
It is my favorite show of all time, and having now heard an entire season of this pod, I really wish this pod existed when I was in high school. Would have made late nights deep down in Lost Forums even more fun. My boyfriend and I just booked a vacation to Hawaii, where I planned almost all of our activities around Lost, so I figure I should probably watch it with him again since he's never seen it. We just finished Everybody Hates Hugo, and I'm looking forward to catching up to the pod by our vacation in 3 weeks. Wow. Love you all, but love Joanna plus 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 because you read so many reviews by haters. Okay, thank you.
Relevant.
Why right. did it for the likes get an A in AP Calc, Dave?
Because sometimes when you get really deep into pop culture that has like a mystery element to it, you pick up like entirely other skills. For instance, I read Young entirely because of the heavy metal band Tool, which, you know, as long as you get there, I suppose. But it does not, it completely makes sense to me that while trying to, like, decode the numbers and figure out what that giant pendulum, you know, is really pinpointing, that someone could pick up some AP calculus, just trying to figure out Lost.
I wonder if I picked up any skills being obsessed with Lost back in the day.
I learned some things about, I think, mythology that I didn't know. Egyptian mythology.
Lots of people probably read lots of books they thought were important.
Got you again, Lost Watcher. All right, last review is really quick. 5 stars. Great podcast is the title of the review. Great podcast, period, is the substance of the review. Thank you, Belmore, for that review. Okay, so that's it for reviews. And then I'm just going to hit one quick email, and then we're going to roll into the episode. What a time to be alive. All right, so this one comes from Delta. Not the airline, but the person. Wow, that person's probably very sick of that joke. I apologize. Okay. I wanted to share my experience watching Lost. My husband and I started watching Lost after the series finale because we had heard about the divisive ending and wanted to see for ourselves. At the time, we didn't have access to stream it, so we were torrenting the show one season at a time. We watched several episodes a day, so it didn't take us long to get through season 6. We saw the literal explosive ending to the season and excitedly started watching the next episode. Except we didn't realize that was the season finale. The next episode is what we thought was the season finale, but was actually season 7's finale. So for our first watch, we skipped season 7 entirely except the finale. I think it's fair to say that we were confused and disappointed by the ending. When you guys started the rewatch, I decided to watch along with you and eventually binge the whole series. Imagine my surprise when there's a whole season I had never seen before.
Oh, man.
Explanations of some of the weirdness in the show and an explanation of the ending. Anyway, I thought it was kind of amusing and wanted to share. Thanks for really do love the show.
Wait. So
I think the numbers got screwed up. Yeah, I think she's saying
this person lived in a world where the end of season 5 was the ending.
No, it's yeah, that they watched the incident. Oh, sorry, yeah.
And that was it.
No, the incident and then the series finale.
Just skip right to it.
Yeah.
Wow.
That must have been super confusing. But I mean, not that much more confusing than we were for LAX parts 1 and 2, but definitely much more confusing.
Wow, that's wild—a wild ride. So thanks for joining us back here. I will not admit to having torrented anything in my life, but if I had, I might say that there were times when episode orders were messed up. Do you know that's happened?
Oh yeah. Or like seasons are mislabeled.
Theoretically.
Unless there is a zombie season. And then that's going to blow everybody's mind.
All right. So those are some of the emails. We got a great email about The Great Gatsby, but it is incredibly long. So I just want to let you know that, Bertrand, we got your email about The Great Gatsby. You sent it a little while ago. You asked us a favor. I'm looking into it. Just FYI. But we're not reading it out loud.
Ooh, secret messages.
Next week is the episode The Lighthouse, which is one of my favorite episodes of all time. Unfortunately, I'm supposed to leave the live watch. I might not. But I'm going to try. So stay tuned to see who will leave. But one of us will be there.
Someone's going to show up with The Lighthouse.
It's a great episode. And hopefully I can be there.
We could have just left it hanging. Like, who knows? You know. Who knows if someone's going to show up and do the live walk?
You're going to need to crawl down a ladder and look into a cave and look up on the wall and see what name is not crossed out. And that's the person who's hosting the live watch of the Lighthouse next week. But that's it for me, I think, here. Neil Miller, what happened on Lost this week?
Oh, we got stuff happening all over the place in this episode, The Substitute, which was written by Elizabeth Sarnoff and Melinda Sue Taylor and directed by Tucker Gates. It aired on February 16th, 2010, and it takes place on day six. We're still on day six somehow, following the arrival of Ajira Flight 316 on the island, on said island. After trying and failing to recruit Richard to his cause, the man in black, still dressed as John Locke, heads to Dharmaville to convince Sawyer to come with him in search of life and or the island's biggest answers. After a contentious journey through the jungle, to say the least, they reach a seaside cave where the last names of some of our Flight 815 survivors are written on the wall. More on that in a second. Back in the shadow of the statue, our very hot crew of Sun, Frank, Ilana, and Ben decide to head for the temple, where it's going to be safe, and maybe Jin's there. But not before burying their friend, John Locke. And along the way back to the Flight 815 beachside cemetery, Ilana explains that the man in black is now stuck with John Locke's face. At the funeral, Ben gives a very on-brand eulogy for the man he murdered. Elsewhere, in the flash sideways, after admitting that he skipped a work conference to go on a walkabout, John Locke is fired from his job, which stands to put some strain on the wedding plans he's been making with Helen. Remember Helen? I love Helen. But after a chance meeting with Harley in the parking lot of the paper company, he is sent to a temp agency where none other than Rose Nadler hooks him up with a substitute teaching job. There at the school, he meets another teacher named Ben Linus, which I fascinating. When John eventually spills the truth about Australia to Helen, he also admits that he did not, in fact, go on his walkabout. He did the thing where he yelled at the walkabout people. Despite all this, Helen, of course, still loves him because she's wonderful and she's Helen. The whole thing ends in the Cave of Mystery, where the man in black explains the concept of candidates to Sawyer. He also shows Sawyer that he is a candidate. And he gives Sawyer the choice to either protect the island and stay and become the new Jacob, to remain neutral and be a mystery island Switzerland and see what happens, or to help him leave the island and forget about all this. Fed up with the island's nonsense, it does appear as if Sawyer is ready to leave. Fun fact about this episode, it's not super fun, but it is mathematical. John Locke was first seen dead 34 episodes ago. We witnessed his death 14 episodes ago. And in this episode, he is finally laid to rest alongside Scott, Steve, Joanna, all the people who are buried there.
Excuse you. Joanna was buried at sea. Thank you so much.
Oh, sorry. Joanna, they never recovered the body. But Scott, Steve, and all of his broken bones are there. Boone is there, right? Shannon.
Nikki and Paolo are there.
Nikki and Paolo might still be alive. It's hard to tell. So John is now
Libby,
there.
Libby is there.
Libby's there. Ana Lucia. All right, this week's calm question. We're gonna start where this episode ends, which is, let's say that you have been, you know, led through the jungle by a very determined John Locke, who is not John Locke. You've had Richard pop out of the jungle randomly to tell you that everything's going to go terribly if you go with this guy. You eventually make it to the cave, and he explains the whole candidate thing. And he says, all right, what do you want to do? Do you want to become the protector of the island? Do you want to just, like, chill out, maybe go back to Dharmaville and keep drinking? Or do you want to leave? Based on what you know so far, what are you doing? Let's start with Joanna.
I'm not going with this dude.
Fair.
What are my other two options again?
The other two options would be like to just not do anything, which I imagine Sawyer would just go back to Dharmaville and finish that bottle. Or to like take over as the protector of the island.
This is a question about imposter syndrome. Will you give me the intake test first? Ask me what kind, if I could be any kind of animal, what kind of animal would I be? I think do nothing. Wait and see would be my
approach. Sure. All right, Dave. I feel like you're not going to do nothing.
I mean, knowing what I know as somebody who's, you know, seen Jacob and knows that he is basically immortal, it'd be kind of tempting to just step in and be like, because I'm just protecting an island that seems to be pretty capable of protecting itself. Like, I don't see what the big deal is there. So I'm gonna seize the godhood. I'm gonna become the island that substitute.
That is a good point, because as the man in black explains, you know, if we buy everything that he's saying there, nothing bad is coming for the island. So being the protector of the island that no one's trying to take over, doesn't sound like a bad job.
Finally, although, get that loom time I've been wanting.
although we as the audience know that some people might be coming to the island. Who knows?
I'm a little bummed that what I learned being a fan of Lost wasn't loom skills.
I mean, you are still a fan of Lost, and you have a lot of time to learn the loom. So, asks why did you learn the loom, you're like, Jacob made me do it. You could still live that dream.
Do I have to wear his little like rope sandals? Because those look like a little ungainly to work the loom.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Although, like the top and the pants looks very comfortable.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Linen, and very airy.
Yeah, linen PJs for sure. I just want different footwear, I think.
Neil started us off at the cave, since we've been deciding where to start based on a rotating host, this is episode 3. It's my turn, and I want to start with Sideways Locke, because isn't it great to see things work out for John Locke? Even, you know, he has to struggle. He's still Locke, and he still has some of Locke's problems that we've seen before. He still is very upset at the universe, at God or something, about his being unable to walk, and even claims at the end of this that there are no miracles. Luckily, he has Helen there to talk some sense into him and to keep him buoyantly happy. There's a scene very early on in the Sideways universe where after Locke's rescued from the grass, he's just happily sitting in a bathtub with the door open, picking out like shades of what the backing for the chairs for their wedding should be. And I love that for John Locke. He might, you know, be on the precipice of getting fired from his stupid box job, but just the idea of Locke in his home doing something normal and it's not miserable, I don't think we've ever seen that before. So it was really nice seeing that here. Just like domestic Locke, I really enjoyed it, even on top of Helen being there, because Helen's just a joy whenever she waltzes back into the series. Joanna, in terms of we've seen Locke be unable to maintain this relationship before.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
What's different in the Sideways?
Yeah. So it's a great question. It's interesting because I feel like I see movement in him in this episode. So I don't know what happened before. I mean, we know, I don't mean to spoil one of our corners, but we know that in this version of events, Locke has some measure of relationship with his dad, because Helen just offhandedly remarks that they'll, you know, his dad is going to come to their wedding. So he's,
and I think
not,
he has a picture of them together too, somewhere in his stuff.
So he's not as like torn up about that, right? Like, so he can better access his relationship with her, but he's still keeping things from her. You know, he didn't initially tell her about the Australia trip, like what he's actually doing there. And he doesn't initially tell her when he gets fired. And that kind of dishonesty and evasiveness is sort of what blew up the relationship in the first place. And so, I mean, I guess I'm going to kind of throw the question back at you guys, because my I was reading a lot of recaps, and a lot of people seem to think that, like, Locke's experience, the walkabout, is what changed him. But I think it's his interaction with Rose in this episode. What do you guys think?
Mm-hmm. No, I like that, because he does sort of, he admits at the end that he didn't get to go on the walkabout, and it sort of played out the same way. But yeah, I think it all changes when Rose tells him about her cancer,
right,
and he sort of gets a little bit of perspective and a little bit of that, you know, tough love. And yeah, like Dave's right. He, after that, or sort of in this episode, we get to see him a little bit happy. So it's almost John being, you know, immediately rewarded for a little bit of growth there.
Yeah.
And I like it. I think it's a really good way for the show to give us some easy wins on this side of the story for John Locke, where it's like, we just feel good for him. We're super excited to see Helen. And even though he has struggles, like this, you know, even the meeting with Hurley, like, you can feel things going better for John Locke because, you know, he's becoming a more chill human being, which, you know, balances well with the man walking around in John Locke's, with John Locke's face on the island doing all kinds of mysterious, potentially devious things.
Yeah. What do you think, Dave? Is it Rose?
I think that because he has people like Rose and because he has people like Helen,
yeah,
that's what makes him manifest as a fearless John, which we get called out in the other plot line. But let's assume that these plot lines are talking to each other. John Locke of the island was always scared, even when he was pretending. And because of that, he was, I think, obsessed with the things that he decided were tenets of his faith, things that were supposed to happen, things that were destined. John Locke of the Sideways seems to not... It seems like once he's rolling up to get super obsessed... and whereas John Locke of the Island would have doubled down, John Locke of the Sideways is self-conscious enough and maybe not afraid of, you know, having someone to pick you up off the lawn versus not having somebody to pick you up off the lawn, and therefore can say things like, you know, he could be chill about Oceanic losing his knives, or he could be chill about, you know, trying to take a job at a construction site and getting a very nice talking down. He doesn't have to take everything as an assault because he's not basing everything off this, my father stole my kidney,
yeah, I mean,
and therefore the closest people to me are untrustable,
but...
sort of.
This role. John resists the urge to punch Randy Nations in the face, which I think is a win.
But he also, he still has some of that, like when he's talking to Hurley about like the parking space. You know what I mean? And he's like, I'm not going to park in the handicapped parking space. You know, it's still somewhat in there in him. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I just think he's able to assess it clearer than John Locke on the island, who just thought forward was the only way to go.
Well, I read a really interesting take on that from Miles McNutt, who one-time guest on the show, great cultural writer. Cultural leanings, I think is his blog. It's either cultural leanings or cultural learnings. I never remember, but a great writer. Anyway, so he was covering Lost at the time, and he wrote this really interesting thing about John Locke's fear. John Locke's fear being rooted in the miracle that happens to him on the island, right? So he says, John Locke was always scared. He was scared that it would all be taken away from him, it being like his ability to walk again. Desperate to solve the puzzles of the island so that his dream wouldn't end, Locke became a believer not because he felt safe, but rather because he felt deathly afraid of what would happen if the dream ended, and the tension that defined his life before arriving on the island never truly left him, even when he was able to move his legs. So I just really like that idea of like John has this one miraculous thing happen to him and he is so anxious, and to like his like zealotry around the island, as we've talked about before, has connected to that miracle. But I hadn't connected like the fear of that going away directly to that assessment that Sawyer has, where he's like, John Locke was always afraid, you know?
Yeah.
That was interesting.
But it's nice to see, you know, happier John. I don't want to see a full happy John. I don't want to see a switch like with Hurley, where it's just like, and then he was, you know, he was an activist for ramps at, you know, KFC. Like, I think that would have gone too far.
Well, so we know that things are different in this space we're in now. But I get really emotional when Helen shows up, because there's just John, like, once again, on the ground, like, humiliated. But he's laughing. First of all, that's the first sign that, like, he's a different John, right? Is that he's on the ground, he's not angry. He's, like, the sprinklers turn on, he's laughing. And then Helen's there, and I'm like, yay, mm-hmm. John! Yay for you! So, yeah.
So if he doesn't go to the island and he doesn't get this miracle, he also appears to be a person that doesn't put a lot of faith in destiny or something, because Helen's the one who brings it up in the sideways. But that being said, I'm happy enough with the direction that John Locke is going. I don't want him to get sucked in with these other messy people. Can John Locke and Helen just be fine? Could that be the end of the episode?
Maybe, but then what would we do with Ben?
I guess you're right.
That's like Rose and Bernard being like, can you just leave us alone in our cabin in the jungle, please? Leave Helen and John alone.
But what is a story about John Locke without his actual soulmate, Ben Linus?
That's a good point. Yeah, they're gonna get teamed up and like some after school activity where they're like, we need two coaches to run the blank club.
Sure.
It's going to be John Locke and Ben Linus.
Oh my God. They're going to have color wars, color day, color wars.
Yes.
Ben and John are going to be in different teams. No, you know, they're playing a lot, obviously, like this whole like man of faith thing. And then John's like, there are no miracles. Right. He doesn't believe in fate. Helen's the one who's like, maybe it's destiny that you met this guy named Jack Shepherd, like all this sort of stuff like that. And he's like, I don't believe in fate. I don't believe in destiny. Meanwhile, he's just like bopping around town, running into all these people. He was on a flight, like, you know, not that he recognizes them, but he's like running into Hurley and running into Rose. And what could feel more destiny laden than all of that? You know,
what we're going to learn is that Hurley employed everybody in both universes. That's the finale.
Oh, man.
This is Hurley's like, oh, Desmond, I bought you this boat. It's called the Elizabeth. Why? I don't know. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. Whee! it's pretty great. All right. Is there anything that we want to touch on in the sideways? I guess, you know, we get to see dear Randy again in his native box manager position, which I don't think we've seen him in since Walkabout. Because mm-hmm. ever since then, he became a Hurley sort of side character. But here he shows up again. Joanna, oh, how's his wig?
Oh, thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
It's looking it's pretty good. But like, that hair was so bad to begin with. So I think they did a good job just like greasing
it. Didn't he have like frosted tips the first time around?
Not the
or something?
First time. No, he's got that like
one point.
That like gross early, I think in Trisha Tanaka when he's like working at Mr. Klux or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He frosts those tips.
He frosts those tips, maybe. I don't know.
The frosted tips doesn't fit in with the box company's dress code, but mm-hmm. Mr. Klux much more laid back.
Yeah. Also love that no matter how happy you make Hurley as a character, he still thinks Randy is a huge douche.
Well, it's just still a mystery why he employed Randy after Randy was his shitty boss at Mr. Klux. He's like, mm-hmm. you know what?
You're too nice, Hurley.
I'm going to put you in charge of this Bucks company office. And Randy didn't learn anything. He didn't learn anything from the meteor destroying Mr. Klux. He didn't learn anything from Hurley's kindness. He's just still an asshole, and Hurley employs him, you know.
Mm-hmm. Some things don't change
in all universe. Randy is the same. Randy is the constant. Being a douche.
You know what's a fun fact about this episode, actually, is Jack Shepherd becomes the first character to be in 100 episodes. But I feel like that should be an asterisk, because like it's just in that weird little like flashback to Jacob touching him. Right. That's the only time Jack's in the scene.
So yeah, he gets a statistically in 100 episodes.
Yeah.
But if you cut out the flashback, well, I bet there are other ones where he only appears in, like, you know, flashbacks. Is he in? Oh, no. I bet he's in every finale. That makes sense. Oh, Jack.
We should also note the lady who does John's intake, right? Poor mm-hmm. Rose. That she's, like, the fortune teller from the Hurley episode where, like, Hurley's dad pays the fortune teller.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm.
That makes a lot of sense. I didn't notice that. Good job, Joanna. I'm making this podcast worth it.
The only reason I noticed it is, like, she arrives in like, such a way of, like, hey, notice me. That's, like, she had a real hey, notice mm-hmm. me vibe. I'm like, lady, who are you?
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I picked up the vibe, but I was just like, here's an extra that someone told her, like, you got cast on the final season of Lost, and she just brought it. Like, having no idea what it was, but her eye expression from curious about what his animal is to very sad that he isn't going to play along and wants to speak to her manager is very subtle and good. Good job, extra. Wait, well, I guess she's not an extra if she has a speaking role.
Feature player.
Feature player. Your residuals will wear out which one you actually are. All right, let's jump to the island, which is maybe in the future, but maybe in another universe. As we've established on previous podcasts, both these things are happening. We can finally say, here in the column, a very special word. It's called candidate, which I think is the questions we're supposed to have at the end of this episode. So let's start at the beginning with some clickety-clack vision. We get smoke cam. But now that we know that he can turn into Locke, we get to do the entirety of the smoke cam, all the way from checking on Sawyer, who's playing some search and destroy and breaking his stuff in Dharmaville, over to a machete, and then we get the sound, and Flock steps in, picks up the machete, cuts down Richard, and we are in an episode that is about fake John Locke telling us about new rules that we did not know about. And neither did Richard. Richard doesn't know the rules. I don't think we as a viewer even know all of the rules, because there's apparently some other rules. Says Dry Ghost Kid. But I think importantly, gets Richard down. As we're told by Alana later in the episode, Locke is recruiting. So I would assume, and both my co-hosts can disagree if I'm wrong, but his first attempt to recruit is Richard. Mm-hmm. He's like, Richard, I wouldn't lie to you. Mm-hmm. I took John Locke's body because he's a candidate. And Richard's like, what's that? And Flock uses the very good antagonist move of being like, I never would have kept big world secrets from you. I would have shared everything with you. I would have done the exact opposite of the god I'm trying to talk you out of. A very temptation-based, talking-based, smiling while sliding a knife into your side sort of approach. Richard, however, whatever he does know, knows that this is all full of shit and does not join Locke.
I just love the performance from Nestor in this episode because he so immediately tells you with his eyes that he is there is no chance he's going with this dude. In fact, he is so against it that he comes back and pops out of the jungle to tell Sawyer, hey man, this guy is not on the level.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Hey, where is he?
he wants close? To kill everyone
you've ever loved.
Everyone. Okay,
come,
bye.
Come with me. We're going to the temple.
Yeah, and it's a perfect matching of energy because we've got this on the other side. This amazing Josh Holloway as Sawyer, who has completely given up, and he is at this point. I think he goes with fake Locke just to sort of have something to do at this point. I don't know if he really cares that much. I mean, the man barely puts on pants for this. So I just love the way that Sawyer reacts, like, what are you talking about, Richard? Like, I know that he's a bad guy. I'm just out here trying to get some answers, still probably half in the bag.
Yeah, I love those heavy pours that he did. And he just like sloshed the whiskey on old Smokey there. Can we go back to something really quickly? I'm going to ask Dave this. Dave, sure. What's a candidate?
It appears what we're told in the cave is they are the people that Jacob has brought to the island to replace Jacob, who was protecting the island, which seems maybe the same thing we heard about at the beginning of the incident, or maybe not. So at the beginning of the incident, it's like you keep bringing people here. Jacob, you keep bringing people here, and it always ends the same way. And Jacob's like, it only ends once. So I don't know if we're like in that end game or if we're in a process of that end game, but apparently the people who are losties who are left have been chosen by Island God to replace Island God, even though they never remember meeting him. He has touched each of them, denoting them as candidates. So unlike, say, being claimed, which we dealt with last week, a candidate does have to be touched by Jacob and apparently assigned a number in the cave. So the making of a candidate appears to be name-based, writing-based. I think we could guess that's probably what these lists are that we've been talking about. Although I don't know if I could fully say that because Richard, who apparently has been passing on lists to Ben, according to previous seasons of this show, also didn't know what the candidates were.
Mm-hmm. It's like, no, Richard, you know the people that are on the lists? He'd be like, oh, right, okay.
I just didn't know they were called candidates. I mean, it makes no sense that Richard doesn't know what a candidate is. No sense at all. If those temple yahoos seem to know what a candidate is, why on earth would Richard not know what a candidate is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Richard, again, for the thousandth time, we really need to see the org chart for the others. We really need to understand Richard's role. But I really enjoy, you know, this is a pretty good pitch, especially to Sawyer, as we see, which is like, you know, if you believe that your coming to this island was random, let me tell you about how your free will does not actually exist and how you've been manipulated by, you know, this guy Jacob to be brought to this island, and all this happened because God is angry with you or curious about you or whatever the reason. That's a good pitch for Sawyer, because he's pretty angry about the fact that he ended up on this island and now is alone. So it's good. It's a very good, like, high level faith argument. You know, this idea of free will versus are there things that are destined to happen? Are you living out a plan of some deity?
Follow-up question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there also a possibility that Sawyer is just intrigued by this person who tried to con him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is like the con man off at this point, because we have a guy who's literally wearing someone else's face to try to fool people, or not really fool people, but get the idea. And, you know, Sawyer is an agent of chaos at this point, right? Like, he's alone. He's been sad about what happened to Juliet. And I think that we should expect that not everything that comes out of his mouth is going to be the God's honest truth at this point.
I mean, that's a quick... Okay. Sorry, I don't mean to take over this, Dave, but I have a question for you.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
We've been asking back and forth, I think a lot in the storm, but definitely some in the calm, about whether or not Smokey can lie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And so, like, okay, so does he lie when he says anything to Sawyer coming into the house? And no, because, you know, he's like, I thought you were dead. I am dead. You know, like he doesn't ever really pretend to be John other than wearing John's face. And then I do like that moment when Sawyer's like, you're not John Locke, and he gives him like a surprise face, like, oh, I see, game recognized game or something like that.
Right.
But Then later in the episode, after definitely chasing a small blonde child who looks like Matt Damon through the forest, the jungle, Smokey says to Sawyer, "What kid?" Is that technically a lie? No. But so my question is, Dave, are we any closer to knowing whether or not Smokey can lie?
If you've seen the entire series, yes, he lies in this episode very directly. However, in terms of that moment that you're referencing, I think that's actually the moment where Sawyer stops being curious and starts going into a con-off. Because I think he's sort of... Sawyer's sad, but he isn't not game to figure out why he's on the island. I think he kind of, you know, take it or leave it. He's pretty deep in the whiskey. He just has to throw on some pants.
Yeah, like, but he doesn't have anything else going on, so why not get some answers?
But it's when, I think, Locke comes back after having run off, after Richard's like, this guy is bad news, where all these things add up, and Sawyer's like, well, what happened with the kid? And Flock refuses to address it. I think that's when Sawyer's like, oh, I'm going to have to shoot this guy in the back of the head. Like, I thought we were here for something else, but this is definitely a him or me situation.
But then he doesn't shoot him in the back of the head.
No, because he gets, you know, sweet talked out of it, or just assumes that I feel this entire tension that regardless of what the blonde kid says, like, this Flock monster wouldn't mind Sawyer ending up dead. He would just as much like to recruit him as he would, you know, fall off the rope ladder, to his doom.
Yeah, I mean, the kid said you can't kill him. I mean, at this point, assuming he's talking about Sawyer, but he didn't say anything about stopping him from falling off of a cliff.
You know,
due
the
to
rules.
Some bad ladder work.
You know the rules. You can't kill him.
Yeah. But he could maybe make him in peril. It just all seems...
Do you think that that's a... do you think... I mean, it looks a little hokey because of special effects or whatever, but, like, do you think James falling down and Locke grabbing him, not Locke grabbing him, is that, like, is that a Boone reference, or is that completely unrelated to Boone? It's not quite the same scenario. I was just thinking, like, you know, someone... falling off a cliff. It hasn't happened that often on this island.
I mean, that's true. I don't know. At this point, we're orbiting around so many repeating ideas that, like, this island or this show, I don't think they've really tipped their hand which way is interested in returning to lots of season one things. This one has a lot of walkabout callbacks, which you mentioned, could have some Boone stuff. Last week's episode had a lot of Saeed episode callbacks, but then also had some Rousseau mixed in. So I feel like we're entering something like cyclical in nature, but I don't know if we're... I guess we're up to Boone falling. It is an abbreviated season.
Fun fact. Apparently the graveyard on the beach is called Boone Hill. But there's a fun note on Lostpedia where it's like a caption or whatever says like Boone Hill because Boone is the first person buried here, and the caption's like, this is Scott Steve erasure. Like, Scott was definitely the first person buried there, not Boone, not you, Boone.
Anyway. Poor Boone Hill. Good thing we gave him a falling down award, or nobody would have remembered Boone. Anyway, he goes to pick up Sawyer, like, way before all of this, and says that thing about, like, Locke being scared, which I think is this entire episode is a really smart way to use Sawyer, because I think a lot of times where either through Josh Holloway's performance or through the structure of how this episode unfolds, it's saved from being really dumb. It's safe from being Sawyer's, like, a chess piece that's getting moved around. But from his, like, immediate reading of not John Locke, even though he's, like, drunk and pantsless in his sad Dharma house, all the way through...
How did his undergarments get so dirty? Like, why are they so dirty?
Listen, he's going through a really hard time right now.
Yeah. But hasn't it just been, like, a couple hours since Kate left? Did he roll around in the backyard?
He had like a one-person mosh pit in the living room.
He had to listen to Search and Destroy 14 times in a row.
Right. Just over and
He's
over.
He's like, I'm the forgotten boy. Oh.
I wrote that in my notes.
Oh, he's just, the forgotten boy.
I wrote, I am the forgotten boy, and then just like a lot of laughter just to myself. I'm the world's forgotten boy. Because like it's a bit on the nose. All right. Anyway.
All right. Let's talk some specifics. We've already talked about candidates. I want to know, Neil Miller, mm-hmm. what did we learn about the person calling himself John Locke on the island this episode? What do you feel is credible?
Well, I think that the information that we get from Ilana, that he is like stuck with John Locke's face, feels important. Because I think about like which characters have reason to lie to us and which don't. I think Ilana seems pretty messed up by Jacob dying. And if she was like that firmly on Team Jacob, she doesn't have a lot of reason to like lie to like Sun and Frank and Ben. Like she's just gonna give us potentially some good exposition. So I think that's important, because that, you know, now sort of solidifies that this character we're watching act as John Locke. You know, every time we see that character, it's the man in black. And it also puts to rest, I think, probably what would have been a big theory at the time, which is like, if the man in black can become John, can he become everybody else?
Yeah, can we trust anybody that we don't see with John?
Oh my god, I hadn't thought about that. Of course, it would have been like the faceless man shit and Game of Thrones
sure.
all over again.
It would have been like, oh, how do we know that Jacob's
That's
talking
Arya.
To Hurley? Like, we
That's
don't know.
That's Arya. That's Arya.
So it's a clever way to put that to bed, because as we've talked
Very
about
smart.
In previous episodes, you know, before Jacob died, the man in black showed up as different characters, and that would have been a nightmare in season 6. So clever little piece of writing from Damon and Carlton in the writer's room. Yeah. And I don't know if we've learned a lot more. We are now learning more about how this, whatever this game or conflict between the man in black and Jacob is, we now know that it is very old and that it involves Jacob bringing people to the island for the purpose of trying to, I guess, get them to take over for him. Although really crappy, like onboarding process. If you're trying to get somebody to take over for you, deciding not to ever meet them or reveal yourself to anyone within like 6 degrees of them, just seems very inefficient.
Like, at the very least, you can ask them what kind of animal they would be if they could turn
right.
into any animal, you know?
Yeah, like, so all these people have been candidates this whole time, and Jacob has not had any contact until, what, 2 episodes ago when he finally talked to Hurley?
It's not how I would do it, is all I'm saying.
Yeah, it's not great.
Well, the question is, like, is that a rule that he couldn't?
Sure.
You know, there are these, like, various rules. We don't know who made them. But, like, there's a rule that the smoke monster is held to, which is that he can't kill him, maybe.
Can't kill Sawyer.
Sawyer.
Sure.
So, like, maybe Jacob, like, because the first time he reveals himself to Hurley is after he's dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Like, maybe the agreement is, all right, I'm Jacob. I'm not allowed to talk to them. You, Smokey, not allowed to kill them.
I think he's allowed to find them, because in this episode he says he took John Locke's form because he knew as a candidate Locke could get close to Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's he just can't like actually put his finger on the scale as a physical presence, I suppose.
I mean, but he like did touch them off island, so there is all that
sure.
stuff.
Right.
But like,
oh, yeah,
but,
and
yeah,
I guess he
once
talked
they
to
get
them
on island. I don't know. Yeah. It's a lot of questions. But, like, you know, if you think about the story of Job, which is sort of what we're thinking about when it comes to John Locke specifically, but also just, like, the man in black and Jacob in general, this idea that, like, it seems to be that they're playing some massive game of Job. like, what is the nature of man sort of game, right? And in the story of Job, like, I think you're allowed to do stuff to them, but you as God are not allowed to walk down and be like, psst, Job, it's me, God. I killed your family and gave you the pestilence, but it's just a bet I have with the devil, so don't worry about it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you're not allowed to give any useful exposition,
right? Exactly.
To the humans, the poor, pitiful humans.
Oh man,
Jacob. And gods suck. God's, I'm telling you.
Yeah, Jacob's not a great one.
Yeah, Jacob, definitely not in the top 10 of gods that I've encountered in my life.
What do you guys know about Jesus? The temptation of Jesus in the desert by the devil.
That he wandered in the desert. Jesus wandered in the desert for a period of time and was tempted by the devil, and then eventually Jesus turned him down. I'm sure I've written like a report on it at some point, but that's all that stuck with me.
Pretty sure I read it. I think at one point the devil makes a pretty good case. But you know, the whole point of the story is that Jesus still says no, you know, cause I think what he's out there for 40 days and 40 nights. Is this the same story?
Is this the film with, two Ewan McGregors in it?
Is this the Josh Hartnett film or the Jim Caviezel Mel Gibson film? Which one?
Wait, was Josh Hartnett in the Jesus film?
No. No, wasn't Josh Hartnett in that 40 Days and 40 Nights movie?
Oh my God. Yes, with Shannon Sossaman. Okay. Yeah. So there are three tests that the devil gives to Jesus. And he tests him
I could remember this. Okay. He has to make food to make himself not hungry.
Mm-hmm.
He has to fall from a rock and have angels catch him because he's God's chosen.
Mm-hmm.
And if he like worship Satan will like fuck off and leave the world to be Satanless, I think is the third one.
That he, if he follows Satan, he will have like all the kingdoms in the world or whatever.
Sweet. That was close.
So I was trying to like graft it onto the story of Sawyer a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the falling from a great height is like the fall off the cliff. The like all the kingdoms can be yours thing is sort of like, do you want to follow me so we can get the hell out of here and go home, like sort of thing.
Right at the end.
And then like, I don't know, the man cannot live on bread alone thing is like, I don't know, man cannot live on whiskey alone. I don't know. I couldn't really fully get there, but I was trying craft it over. You know what I mean?
He does try to convince Sawyer that what he truly needs is answers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the whole initial thing of Sawyer's ready to bury his depression in a bottle, and he convinces him that the proper nourishment is answers to the big question.
You know? Mm.
And again, Sawyer puts on pants, which I think, you know, I don't know if he passes or fails, but it definitely gets some action. It instigates some forward momentum in Sawyer's life.
Anyway, so like I bungled that, I'm sure, because I'm me. But like, if anyone listening is shaking their head or muttering to themselves, please do write us an email about the. But like, I mean, let's just agree that Smokey, both to Richard and to Sawyer, is given real devil in the desert temptation vibes in this episode.
Yeah,
right,
for sure.
And I kind of like the idea of like, I think last week's episode I was like, who's the Jesus? Is Saeed the Jesus? Is Jack the Jesus? And I'm like, what if everyone's the Jesus?
What like, if all... everyone's the Jesus?
They're all the Jesus.
If everyone's the Jesus, then no one's the Jesus, Joanna.
Sure,
it's just a Jesus island. It was a Jesus island all along.
But this is also the episode that establishes the concept of candidates, and that there are certain people who are special in some way to, I guess, at least Jacob, maybe to the island itself. You know, because like, you know who wasn't a candidate? I don't think Scott Steve.
Oh, actually, I don't know. Well, I mean, now we can. Okay. Now we can reveal in the comm that there is a list of all the names that were on the cave wall. And I can look up right now whether or not Scott Steve is candidate. I will look it up. But you know who's not a candidate anymore? Kate Austin.
Sure.
Austin.
Well, she had a bad episode, yeah. So she got her name crossed.
Yeah. Austin Kate, not a candidate. Why?
No longer a candidate, right? Why? Her name's crossed off.
Yeah, why?
So, yeah, and I mean, the reason why John Locke's name gets crossed off is because he's dead. So it is curious as to why Kate is no longer a candidate and remains among the living.
I believe that Claire's name's also on the wall, but is crossed out.
Yeah, I guess I've always assumed, and this might not be true, we'll see what the results of Joanna looking up the cave names is, is that the only ones that aren't crossed off are the ones they talk about in this episode. So it's Shepard, Quan, which, as Smokey points out, we don't know if that's Sun or Jin. Mm-hmm. So I guess the, you know, protect both of them. Ford and Reyes.
Wait, but let's go through some of these, like, surprising names that are on this wall now that we can talk
Love it.
About this. Okay.
Cave talk.
Some of the Frenchies are on there. Rousseau's name is on there. That's not that surprising to me.
Mm-hmm. is Montan on there?
There's a Jensen on there, and I like to think that that was a little thing for Jeff Jensen. I don't know if that's... Mattingly, probably the U.S. Army soldier whose uniform was stolen and used by another in 1954. R.I.P. Mattingly. Mm. Lee is on there. Do you think it's your smooth boy, Dave?
Jai Lee! Why did you make it to the island? It's because Sun pushed you out of a window. That's why.
Okay.
Still can't believe Sun didn't murder Jai Lee. It was right there in that episode.
I have some more. Hold on. Naomi Dorrit. Ooh. Naomi was a candidate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
she at least got to the island.
Brennan. Might be Brennan from the science expedition. It might also be Kate's friend Tom Brennan, who was with her when she was touched by Jacob.
Ooh.
Interesting. Shannon was a candidate. Let's see. Who else? Yeah, the Quans we know. Stanhope. So either Harper or Goodwin were candidates.
Oh man.
Well, we've seen Soggy Harper. So that's I don't know if that's candidate behavior, but the fact that she popped up randomly in the jungle might have something to do with it.
Charlotte was a candidate. Lewis is on the wall.
Okay.
C.S.
Lewis herself.
Michael was a candidate. Brother Campbell, maybe Brother Campbell, who's, I think, one of Desmond's monks, is on there.
Brother Campbell.
Brother. Miles is a candidate, but crossed out. It's because it says Strom. Why is Miles crossed out? What
That's
did
a
he
good
do?
Question. What did you do, Miles?
But Strom is on there. Charlie's a candidate.
Mm-hmm. We know why he's crossed out.
Yeah, yeah. Steve Jenkins. Steve is a candidate.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Claire. The bounty, Kate's bounty hunter or whatever he is. Marshall.
The Marshall?
The Marshall.
Oh,
the Marshall
yeah.
was a candidate?
Mm-hmm.
Jacob, bad.
this is my favorite one, though. We talked about this in the storm for Nikki is a candidate. Nikki Fernandez is a candidate. So, you know, anyway, Rose is a candidate. There's, you know, Pierre Chang, blah, blah, blah. It's all. Danny Pickett is a candidate. Fuck that guy. But he's
on the
yeah.
wall.
So I don't understand.
But he didn't make it.
I don't understand why you get picked in the first place. Because Danny Pickett, that's what a pick. Or Colleen. And I don't know why you get crossed off because Miles is crossed off. But as far as we know,
and it
he's
also.
Still in the line of living, so.
What's interesting about it is that it it's not specific to any one way of getting on the island. Like, there are actual Dharma people. There are, like, full-on others. There's people who crashed. There's the French people who came on their own expedition. So this is sort of, like, it's bigger than the struggle between, I guess, the others and the Dharma folks.
Is Alpert on there?
No.
Ooh.
I know, that's very interesting. I'm not saying this is a complete list.
No, he's a...
Well, it's the thing I was talking
he's
about.
He's in the other cave where they have the org chart.
It was the thing I was talking about before where I'm not sure what we were seeing at the beginning of the incident is the candidate rules thing. Or he made Richard out of sand like a golem. Ooh. Okay, never mind. I take everything back. All right. Speaking of things that we have learned about Smokey, because I think we have some other things that are on the border here. Joanna has spotlighted some of them here. He says he was trapped, and he knows what it's like to feel joy, pain, and betrayal, and he knows what it's like to lose someone you love. So, at one point, this thing that is not human anymore was human, apparently, trapped, but knows these human emotions that he can now play upon / mirror back to us like some sort of sociopath. Richard says, this person wants everyone dead. Everyone you care about. Not just Sawyer. That seems to be because, you know, Sawyer is... A Lostie who crashed here and at this point doesn't know that he was brought here. It seems to include people off the island. Everyone you care about would, I would assume, include his daughter, who is off the island. So that seems like a big threat. We also know that he wants out. He wants off the island. He wants to
leave.
Wouldn't
it be funny if it was just people Sawyer cared about?
Just people. This entire plot is only targeting the Sawyer people.
It's just Cassidy and Clementine.
Right. Still unacceptable because we need to protect Cassidy at all costs.
Absolutely.
But...
Absolutely. That's so funny. it's interesting. One thing I really want to say really quickly about you mentioned the great use of Sawyer in this episode, that like Josh Holloway's performance or like him cracking wise, like making jokes about the ladder and stuff like that. Like all of that is great stuff. But also I love the fact that like Locke's or Smokey's big like selling point is like, I can give you answers, which is obviously like a metatextual, like, hey, confused watchers, don't you want answers sort of thing. Right. But he's paired with Sawyer, who is the entire time been the least interested person in the mysteries of the island.
He does not want answers, really.
He does not care at all. So
again, I think he just didn't have anything better going on at this point. So he's like, all right, fine. Along the way, he found a fun game to play, which is, let's see if this is all a con.
Oh, it's
like,
a
let's con the con man.
What do you think they're trying to say about the answers? Like, answers are overrated. Answers will, in pursuit of answers, dear viewers, will lead you down a rickety ladder down the side of a cliff where you might fall off. So maybe answers aren't what you should be going after. Like, what is the show trying to say?
Yeah, I mean, the answers may disappoint you, sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know, be like Sawyer. But then again, we don't know that necessarily that Sawyer is completely uninterested in the answers. He's there's a lot going on with that guy. I think it feels very intentional to take this moment, like we talked about last week being an episode that was trying to transition out of all of the, you know, the table setting that they did in that first episode, or sort of the explosive nature of now dividing the story into the flash sideways and what's happening on the island. And this episode is the one that feels like it's giving us some forward momentum, but it also feels like there's a calmness to it because we're riding along with a character who is not super anxious about getting the answers in Sawyer. You know, like he's sort of a perfect foil to the intense seriousness that we're getting from Terry O'Quinn as Smokey. Like, he really is trying to like get some shit done, you know, like he really intensely wants Richard on his team and that doesn't go well. And then he's also maybe freaking out because he's seeing this kid in the jungle. that Sawyer can also see, interestingly enough. And, you know.
But Richard doesn't seem to see.
Correct. Yeah, exactly.
So can only candidates see him? Question.
Who, I guess maybe that's
can only
rule.
Candidates whose names haven't been crossed off the list see him?
Yeah. But yeah, like,
but then
Sawyer.
Jin
like,
couldn't see him.
Couldn't see Jacob.
Right.
The ghost.
Yeah.
But this kid is, you know, who knows?
This kid might be the Ben's mom of the whole situation. It's just like, oh, there's a ghost. Did that person die here? Who knows? It's probably not. We saw her die not here, but there she is.
Why does he have a sleeveless hoodie from Old Navy on? I have a lot of questions.
Before we...
The kid is like the referee. This is my
oh,
galaxy
like the island
brain
referee?
Theory. So yeah, there's an island referee that pops up every once in a while to like re-explain the rules to Jacob and Smokey. So like, this is a brand new character. We'll just call him the referee.
The ref. We're casting a 14-year-old blonde child for the referee, the part of the referee.
All refs are blonde. Everyone knows that.
Sure.
Like Dennis Leary, the ref himself. okay, I know we have like a few more things to get to before we get to the corners, but really quickly, I think what the ongoing debate of this final season is going to be, and I feel like it's going to be Joanna versus Dave, with Neil taking various sides at various times, as it's meant to be, is lore the most important part of this final season, or is emotion the most important part of this final season? And, you know, last week, Dave expressed some frustration because, like, we didn't get any Locke or Ben or Richard or whatever. This is empirically a better episode, but like, is it because of the lore that it's a better episode, Dave?
No, I don't think so. Because if I'm a lore hound here, like, yeah, a nice sideways story with Sawyer is great, but like, we had Feral Claire at the end of last week's episode. Like, that's obviously where I wanted to go, you know? So I don't know. I think what is happening is the final season is trying to provide me with like, oh damn, Lost shock moments. But also knows that it doesn't have a next season to kick answers to. So they're trying to set things up that will eventually pay off or reminds us something of something that we know from the past. But in terms of very important story points, the mindset of Sawyer going from basically resigning to staying on the island to at the end of this island being like, fuck yeah, let's get off, and seeing Happy Locke, I think is going to end up being more important, only because I think in order for lore to be super important, the lore has to be like the ah shit Lost moment, you know? And that's what I want for things like Locke is the smoke monster. That's great. All the people who were brought here because their names are on a cave wall randomly associated with the numbers that have never been associated to people before. I'm pretty sure we knew they were the variables of the Valenzetti equation, but, you know, hey, fuck me, right? Like, that sort of stuff is frustrating.
But Dave, in the cave,
yeah,
there are two rocks.
Yes.
One black and one white, mm-hmm. and they sit on a scale.
Yeah.
And he picks up the white one and moves it off the scale.
Mm-hmm.
Bro.
That's some lore.
Whoa, bro. There's a loot there, too.
Yeah, who else
there's a loot.
Do you think Jacob, like, well, every time one of Shannon dies, Jacob looks up from his, like, loom in the foot or his rocking chair in the cabin, wherever he happens to be, and he goes, ugh. And he has to walk over to that cliff and climb down that rickety ladder. And he picks up his lute and strums it sadly, R.I.P. Shannon, and then puts a strike through Rutherford on the wall.
I mean, I think I'm going to have to talk about this at the storm, but okay. I do have a theory that based out of the fact that those rocks are there.
This is like Jacob's office above the garage sort of thing.
Yeah, basically.
This is like his workshop where he's workshopping it. And I love the throwaway line. This is another thing where the show, you know, gives us a little bit of lore, but also gives us enough of like, here's something that didn't matter, or at least as far as what characters are telling us, when he says, oh yeah, Jacob had a thing for numbers. Like,
but it's so stupid.
What a way to like just like be like, hey, all the number stuff, Jacob's just weird.
I guess. It's annoying. I don't care. I genuinely don't care about the numbers, but that's kind of annoying. What I think is better is it's an inside joke. That's better. Mm-hmm. That's funny, right? I think. Anyway. Yeah, I just love the idea of dumb Jacob having to climb down a ladder every time one of the candidates, the old candidates, dies. Or maybe it's the smoke monster keeping track. I don't know.
I mean, if you're those ladders are definitely somebody built by somebody who basically thinks of themselves as immortal. Because yeah. Like, what the fuck, guys?
Yeah. Sure. Very unsafe. Very old.
I don't know about rock carving on this island, except there are statues. So, like, carve some stairs, you idiots.
I guess it's also interesting that Jorah remains uncrossed, though he did die mm-hmm. briefly. So, that's interesting.
He hasn't
maybe they just haven't
claimed yet, or hasn't made it to his heart.
Brief or, like, the death. News hasn't gotten over to that side
to
of
the
island yet. Well, whoever, I guess if Jacob was the one maintaining this cave wall list, Saeed died after Jacob.
Mm-hmm. I know, but like while Smokey's down there crossing lock off, shouldn't he cross Saeed off as well? No, it's so funny. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting sidetracked. Let's plow on.
There are some things that Alana does this episode that we are going to circle back to. First, she takes Jacob's body ash. And port some of that out of there.
What did you just say?
Body ash.
I just like the way you said it. Body ash.
And she's going to port it somewhere. We don't know why, but she's going to, you know, put your God in a bag. If you find the remnants of God, put it in the
sure.
bag.
Sure. I mean, she's so on Team Jacob that she needs to carry a little bit of him with her.
Also, if this is such a Jesus island like we're talking about, like, you can't count on bodies to stay put. So bring one with you if you've got it.
I would have, like, that little pouch would not have been enough for me. I've been like, everyone empty your satchels. We're taking every speck.
We're taking as much God bod as possible.
We're going to try
this. Load the God bod in your satchel and let's go.
It's either this or very specific flowers we don't have.
You just imagine a situation where Alana fills up a giant bag with Jacob, drags it to the temple, and then just pours it into the spring. Like, please reassemble. We need God.
Into the Lipton's iced tea pool?
Right? I mean, it would be so much more murky after that.
She's going to dump the God bod ash into the Lipton iced tea pool. And yeah. That's how you make a Jacob.
Yeah, good luck with that one, magic water. Good luck figuring that out.
You guys all laugh, but they are describing how we see Richard be formed out of sand in a few episodes, so it's really kind of a spoiler. Alana knows that if Jin's anywhere, he's going to be at the temple, and so she gets Sun to come along, even though Sun is just like having the most confusing 6 days of being on various beaches asking what's going on.
Asking, yeah. Where's Jin? Where's Jin?
Where's Jin? Where's Jin? He's in the Jin? Past. Oh, God. Which, and he's not in the past anymore. Now he's at the temple. What?
Which I guess we know that that's not true, but it's a good, I think it's a good assumption.
I mean,
on Ilana's
her
part.
Information
like, if Jin's still
only,
alive.
Yeah. Her information's only a couple hours old, right? Jin sure. was at the temple.
He was at the temple and would still be at the temple had he not run into Feral Claire.
I mean, I think he's also like, she's just making the assumption that they shot the firework, so everybody's going to the temple.
Sure. Yeah, because everybody knows about the temple now.
Yeah.
5 seasons of no temple.
I mean, Jin definitely knows about the temple.
Now it's like on the map.
If anybody knows the temple, it's Jin. Knows that. Not only is
That's
it on
true.
A Dharma map, but he was there with the French team.
Oh, he was there with the French team. Daniel Faraday was a candidate. Just FYI. Also, the film Amistad was a candidate.
How could Daniel Faraday be a candidate if the entire point of Faraday existing is that he dies on the island? If he doesn't die on the island, then all of this doesn't happen.
Do you think that it's like Schrodinger's crossing off. It's like he's always currently being crossed off, but he's never been crossed off.
That's what we need. We need a Schrodinger something on the island. That's what we're missing.
And it's Dan Faraday's name being in limbo between being crossed off and not crossed off.
It's Schrodinger's chalk. I really love that, like, whoever last crossed up a name on the wall, I don't know who it was, they just dropped the chalk there. Mm-hmm. And Smokey's like, oh yes, this chalk here on the ground. Was it Charlie? Was that the last name crossed off? I don't know. Faraday, I guess.
Yeah. We don't know when Kate's name was crossed off.
Oh. Or when Claire's name was crossed off.
That's
great,
true.
Great questions. Or Miles. What did you do, Miles? All right. What else we got? Where are we gonna go?
A lot of says Smoke Monster's recruiting. I think we should just notice that. We're not living in an episode without future titles, so we know there's a last recruit episode coming up, I think. So, but like, well, for what? We don't know. I don't think we know. And then, finally,
He seems to want to leave.
He definitely seems to want to leave. He's recruiting a people to man a TARDIS. He needs a companion. Because
he's going to need someone who knows how to build a raft. That's why
That's a good one.
Oh, and Sawyer, didn't do any building. Where's the Michael when you need one? Dead.
Where is the Michael? Yeah, dead. He got blown up looking at the exact same person who apparently now can't go off the island. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's lost. Ben's eulogy is nice. It's, more importantly, the eulogy that Locke finally deserves after finally being buried after being dead for 34 episodes. But also seems to come as a surprise to Sun and Alana, who did not know that Ben Linus murdered John Locke. But he did. Luckily for Ben, in this episode, he gets to say goodbye to John Locke, but in another universe gets to say hello to John Locke. So Locke and Ben joined at the cosmic hip here.
Something I really enjoy about this whole sequence with old Ben is that Frank does not seem surprised that Ben murdered John.
Oh, and no. Takes his stride.
And it's definitely, definitely just sort of observing the weirdness. Also that Ben, even though he has this great moment of truth, also does some lying, which is
Frank
very important to his character.
I don't see Frank. I don't see Lapidus up here. Guess what I do see, though?
What?
Horseman. someone named Horseman is on here. Yeah.
Which is just the horse.
Just the horse.
Still.
As if
still
the horse
large.
Was a man. If I could make this horse a man, it could do a bang up job protecting this island.
Mr. Echo's on here, though, of course.
Echo.
I'm just gonna spend the rest of this podcast series telling you
he would have been fun if he could have lasted to season 6.
All right, I think that means it's time for some corners. We're gonna kick off like we usually do with the Giacchino corner. Neil, we got some hot tracks this episode.
We do. We have a couple of fun names, and then a track that is not new to this episode, but we're going to talk about it. One track. There's three tracks for this episode on the season 6 soundtrack. One is just called The Substitute, which not our most inventive work.
No, that's a great. It's a very inventive title for this episode.
There's nine layers.
So
many meanings. yeah. So many layers to it. But we do get Helen of Joy, which is the purest way to describe the emotion Joanna felt when Helen came out to save John from the sprinklers. and then Jacob's Ladders, which is a fun pun and is the track that the sort of intense action track that goes on as, Smokey catches James Ford and leads him to the cave. But the one I want to talk about is the we were talking about this before we started recording, the piece of score that plays over Ben telling Ilana about Jacob's death, which is sort of like it's a new theme that has been introduced since the season 5. finale, The Incident, and it's sort of popped up in different places already. Like, it's there when Jacob is speaking to the man in black on the beach, and it's there when Richard and the others show up to the statue for the first time. It's there when Jacob is speaking to Hurley in the taxi cab, and it's over the Jacob forming the Island Vengers moment. And this is called The Tangled Web. So we're going to continue to keep an eye on where The Tangled Web pops up here in season 6, because I think it's already shown up in like 8 different scenes.
It's like the something magical's happened here theme.
But yeah, it's not quite the Twilight. It's not quite the like, whoa, the island's in the water. It's like, I call it the Grail Knight theme. It sounds to me like a Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones Last Crusade.
Yeah, music. It's kind of like a Jacob's theme, even though it doesn't always have to involve Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Our jungle of mystery moment goes to that little blonde kid who talked about the rules. Like, what's going on with that?
Oh, we solved that. The ref. He's the ref.
Yeah, the ref is the juggle of mystery moment.
It's a young Dennis Leary.
The Boone Carlisle Memorial Falling Down Award goes to James Ford on the cliff rope ladder. I don't like heights, and that stunt looked terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Good also, job. I think we talked about in the past, even if someone catches you, it still counts as falling down.
I mean, if we're talking about, like, yes, we've talked about falling down very specifically, where it's usually vertical distance, and as we've learned through Hot Pocket Gate, once once gravity starts acting upon the body, it is falling down by definition of physics.
I think you mean Dr. Juliet Burke's engagement ring gate.
Dr. Juliet Burke's engagement ring gate.
Yeah, once it starts going,
I'm
going to
say Hot Pocket
trajectory.
Gate because that's the one that Damon Lindelof noticed, and so therefore, it's where we had to talk to Damon Lindelof
about
gravity.
That seems like one of the most obvious ones.
Well, he was like, do we have somebody fall and everything? Well, like, well, obviously the Hot Pocket, which was our mistake for thinking that he would be like, of course, the Hot Pocket. No need to relitigate because James Ford gets that Boone statue this week for sure.
The old Boonies.
Yeah, maybe the only person close is Richard, who was in a trap and just fell on his back. But Richard seems to be doing okay.
Sorry I punched you in the throat, Richard. Sorry.
Yeah, Richard is okay physically and very not okay emotionally.
Yeah, just constantly in a state of shock now, like an abused puppy dog. The John Locke Memorial Coming Back Award goes to Randy. He's a huge douche, but it's been a while, Randy. Welcome back. Even though you're in a universe where you got fired again. I guess I'm out of the book club goes, oh, hey, look, it's Steinbeck's of Mice and Men again. It's back.
Yeah. And the episode
You took my corner, Dave. How dare you?
What I love about this
episode.
Get out
of my book club corner.
They're nice enough to just explain the book in the episode.
Yeah.
Which they don't always do.
Just spoil a book in the episode. I'm a very big fan of that as my spoiler strategy. Have you read of Mice and Men? Nope. Well, too bad. You watched The Substitute.
If you don't recall, Sawyer, the last time we heard Sawyer talking about of Mice and Men, it was like when he and Ben were walking up the hill, and Ben pretended he didn't know what it was, and then he was just like, "Psych! I know what of Mice and Men is, and also I have a rabbit in the satchel." And also, you're on Hydra Island, bitch. What a moment. And I do love Smokey's little line here where he's like, that's a little after my time.
A little after my time. Joanna, why don't you give out the Abs Eterno Award this week since I stepped all over your book club?
Oh, I think we're not doing it, or we're giving it to Lapidus.
Oh, we're definitely giving it to Frank.
Oh,
I mean,
okay.
he doesn't show us a lot of abs.
Glistening
but Frank
chest
deserves
Eterno.
But he digs that grave for John Locke.
He's getting a good core workout this week, at least.
Through the Looking Glass, this is where we spotlight times in the sideways. People look in the mirror. This week we have Locke looking into a shaving mirror while very comfortable in his little bathtub. Dig it. That's like my life would be spent in a bathtub.
He's not in the bathtub in that scene.
Damn it.
No, it's the after he wakes up and gets ready.
Oh, there we go.
And we see it. We see how he puts his pants on.
I was just excited
for
domestic life where you get to be in the bathtub half the time. That seems really great.
Man. Does he to have a bathtub that I could fit in? That's my dream. Does he do the thing where he calls Jack's office before or after he looks in the mirror? I don't know if this matters.
After.
Okay, so he looks at himself in the mirror,
mm-hmm.
then has a moment where he mm-hmm. considers calling Jack, and then mm-hmm. it all falls apart. Okay.
I mean, Kate looked in the mirror, and then she went to go find Claire. So maybe the mirror is going to... I honestly don't know the answer to this,
Jack
fun.
Looked in the mirror and then went back to his seat.
Well, he's connected with people all over the place on that plane. But, like, looked. You know, maybe the mirror is connected to, like, making connections with people.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Or making good, better decisions. So that's the thing. Kate's decision was a good one. Definitely mm-hmm. don't leave the pregnant woman to mm-hmm. fend for herself with no money and no luggage. John, we don't know yet. I mean,
he accepted himself.
That's
well,
true.
He calls Jack, and then he doesn't call Jack. But I do love that scene when he's like, and also Terry O'Quinn's. I mean, we didn't really talk about Terry O'Quinn's like performance in this episode, but like it's incredible. But his line reading when he's like, "So if you need me to call a doctor, if you need me to see specialists, if you need me to do that, like I get it. I'm not judging you, but it's never going to be me." And it's just like, ugh, so good.
Yeah, he's not a man of faith in this.
Helen comes through. I love them. Okay.
Spoiler alert for the rest of the series. I don't think there's any bad Terry O'Quinn in it for the rest of the series.
Yeah.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. We're getting good on both ends of the spectrum from mm-hmm. Terry O'Quinn. It's great.
The Bens talking, so it's obviously a lie ward. When Alana asks, did he kill Jacob as well, talking about the man in black, Ben says, yes.
So good.
Because he's only allowed to admit to one murder per episode. And he did two recently, so what are you going to do?
The Spot the Difference corner, we talked about this a little bit at the top of the episode. These are where we try to figure out how the Sideways universe are like amazingly different, named after the old Highlights magazine with two pictures. Got Spot the Difference. This one, of course, John's father is just like, still friends with John, so we don't know how he got in the wheelchair. He might have two kidneys. It seems like a big difference.
I was gonna say, so apparently John's father did none of the things that he did in
yeah.
in our main timeline, because
does that
any
mean
one of them is cancelable.
Oh, I wonder how that affects Sawyer.
Yeah, are Sawyer's parents alive?
Interesting.
But what was I going to say about that? I don't remember.
I think it's an interesting thing because we've been tracking things that are different. But mm-hmm. it's hard to have things that are provably different since before the incident. Like we talked about... or things that had been different after the incident. We talked about how if the island's underwater... Like, Dharma probably still happened. Last week we talked about how Dr. Goodspeed, Ethan, was probably still born on the island, but got, like, evacuated. This would have been different, but it happened before the incident, if James's parents are still alive. Because we know he neglected to stop that, he told Jack back in season 5.
In the 70s.
So we don't know where... time got rewritten in this Sideways universe, and the fact that John is still friends with his dad means it could have gone way far back. We don't know. Gonna have to find out. All right, it's time for the jungle of Kistery. This is where we decide who needs to be kissing on Lost. We decide based on our suggestions from our Slack live watch, and then post that poll to Twitter at Storm Podcast. Last week, we had the episode What Kate Does. Joanna, how did we do?
I mean, I made the mistake of putting James and Juliet on the poll again. I don't know why I did that. I promise you, we're going to retire them for a little while. So James and Juliet are off the poll. They're out of the book club. They're off the poll. So they trampled everyone. It was like Wet Sight and Jack, 13%. Jack and that poison pill, which I thought was going to do better, 15%.
That was my vote.
Kate and Claire and unborn baby Aaron, 20% of the vote. But it was... Crying James and the Ghost of Juliet and the Ring got 50% of the vote. This week, not to put my black rock on a scale and tip it in one direction, but if it's not John and Helen, I will destroy all of you. So we'll see what happens.
Well, you can head to twitter.com/storepodcast right now and make sure Joanna doesn't destroy all of us by voting for John and Helen.
And everyone you love.
And everyone and Sawyer loves.
And Cassidy and Clementine.
I mean, I'm just hoping that Richard and the concept of getting the fuck out of here is
Richard and some arnica ointment.
It's the Frank Lapidus Guess We're Not Going to Guam Act Break Award, which I wish could go to Frank for like his line about a funeral, but that's not actually an act break. So it's going to go to Flock, who yells, "Don't tell me what I can't do," absorbing maybe some John Locke yelling at the ref.
Mm-hmm. And again, he's talking about, "Don't tell me who I can't kill," which is fun. Like, that's some evil shit.
Don't tell me who I can't kill. This week, for our official podcast check-in, we're actually going to play a clip from the podcast. They got to the point, finally, where the final season, maybe because of an enthusiasm gap, doesn't have transcripts for the podcasts. But I'm only saying enthusiasm gaps because it's like, go try to find coverage of Game of Thrones final season episodes on Reddit now. They like that we covered every episode up to the final season like 7 different times, and then everyone did, you know, one time through critically on Game of Thrones and went on the way out. Anyway, here Damon Carlton on the Official Lost Podcast telling you about the numbers.
Last night in The Substitute, a couple things have come up. There's two things people are really talking about.
I would say the numbers would be one, wouldn't you?
I would. And clearly we've talked about the numbers in great length in the past. We've kind of gone on record as saying, look, we're never going to be able to explain why these particular numbers. We've gone on about the Valenzetti equation. But at least now we've revealed that these numbers correspond to some of our passengers.
That's right. And I think, you know, for us, again, this is the classic example of how, you know, we in the show are hoping to kind of point out connections and have you understand a little bit about the significance of things, but to actually elementally explain
why
the mystery of things
numbers, yes,
is an impossible task.
But possible that the numbers don't end here, maybe just a little bit more, Carlton?
I'd say we can give them a little bit more.
A little
I'd
bit
say
more.
There might be a little bit more pretty soon.
Will they have to wait till the finale?
No. They will not have to wait till the finale to get a little bit more.
I have to start listening to this podcast.
You should. You
very
learn a
informative.
Lot.
So that's their answers about the numbers. Joanna's laughing because, slight spoiler, this is about all the answers we're gonna get about the numbers. I'm not saying the numbers don't show up again, but when they come back, it's not like, oh right, the
well,
numbers.
You'll see them next week. I'm just gonna say it.
Fair.
Next week you'll see the numbers again,
and then we could talk about whether or not the numbers were worth anything, I guess.
I mean, I get, like, the thing, I'm both not hung up about the numbers, I both don't care about the numbers, and I fundamentally disagree with Carlton saying, it's impossible to make them significant. I'm like, I don't know, you wrote yourself into a little corner, and you couldn't figure out how to write yourself out of it, and that's okay, yeah. But that's what you did to yourself.
That's what happens, you know? In television, baby. You gotta just make it up as you go along. Lay
no,
the track.
There's no problem with making up as you go along. Like, I always bring this example up, but like Vince Gilligan was forever talking about how they would like paint Walt into impossible corners as like a fun exercise. And then how's he gonna get out of this one? Was like a fun thing that they did to themselves. So making it up as you go along, there's nothing wrong with it. You just need to be smart enough to make up something that like feels satisfying thematically or whatever it is. And with the numbers, I don't think they got there.
Yeah, like, you know? Jacob just having like a thing for numbers.
He had a thing
maybe
for
numbers. Maybe not the best answer.
Very silly.
Well, I think with that, we're going to wrap up the calm and head intrepidly into the storm right after this.
Now is the time on this lovely podcast where we love to thank our lovely Patreon subscribers who keep this boat afloat. These are the Small Council subscribers, because we used to be Game of Thrones podcast, $10 level or above. We like to read their names out in chunks on the episodes. We'll start with some newcomers. We've got Ingvild Alida Bjerke, and I hope I did not butcher that, but if I did, you can write in. Katie Lale, Cheryl Harris, Scott Washaltz,
Sarah Bausman, Marcus Mascarelli, Samba Muteba, Greg Jaeger, Lawrence Agleton, Connor Mufich, Amy H., Sean Dwayne or Dwan, Debbie Denise, Nathan, Randy, Elaine, Jen, Rich, Lyman, Moira Burke, Rami Quiton, and Emma Mathis. Thank you all so very much.
And I would like to add to that thanks Laura E., Dharma Jess, Ali Medeiros, Rachel Matusik, Jeff Cooper, Alicia Graisla, Elliot Goldbaum, hi Elliot, Monica Rickman, Alyssa Scott, Kwang Yu Liu, Julie Bailey, Liz Major, Brian Murowski, Randy Blash, Brittany Whimsy Riot, Sam Cohen, Kate Whitney, Amber Vickers, Patricia Delaney, and Carrie King. Guys, you know how hard it was to not make the small council candidates like a year ago?
It's true.
We finally are going to hang on.
Make that switch.
Guys, you're all candidates now, and you all know
you're
what
candidates.
That means.
You, like Shannon Rutherford, have been chosen. Yeah.
And I would like to throw these names up on the cave wall in chunk. Anissa Ford, Erland Hallbeck, Jeff Cooper, Angela Flunker, Christopher Holmquist, Marissa Zane, Ben Brown, Otto Nim, Carol Blaine, Natalie Smith, Ruby Durham, Lauren Bree, Christopher Bates, Aubrey Iyer, Elise Abschutz, Josh Brown, Victoria Stout, Kathy Schaberg, Grace Brown, and A. Will. Thank you all so very much for being candidates on the Small Council.
And we're back for the storm. There was some debate in between segments just how much of the previous Calm episode had any beeps, if anything. As we're approaching the end of the series, I guess this is as good a time as any to ask you guys, how do you want to continue with the storm? Do you want to just keep making it like shorter and shorter until eventually the last episode? Obviously, we won't have a storm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there are still storm things to talk about.
Absolutely. For instance, I think the cave is used by both parties.
Oh.
You think both Smokey and Jacob use the cave?
I think
interesting.
The inside...
And that's why both rocks are there?
I think the inside joke is when, like, somebody... When, like, things are in balance, they put the rock there. But then when Jacob adds a name or takes a name off, the rock gets moved. And that's just sort of like a sign so they aren't in the same place at the same time.
I do think it's interesting. I was thinking about this as we were talking about it in the calm. That there are two places where there are candidate names.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're gonna get to the lighthouse next week. And in my mind, the cave feels more like a Man in Black workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the lighthouse was like Jacob's, much cleaner, mirror-based, maybe even closer to his home inside the foot of the statue. But it is interesting to think about, like, maybe they both used it over time.
Yeah, because the smoke monster also wouldn't need ladders, so therefore, like, wouldn't concern him that they're, like, shitty ladders.
Sure.
But I do like the idea that because the candidate names are different places... And because, like, we don't have any evidence that Jacob ever was just like, here are the candidates, but there's obviously a rule he can't kill them, but he can kill other people on the island, so there has to be some sort of communication between Jacob and the Man in Black as to who the candidates are.
But, like, genuinely, like, why does Lennon know what a candidate is, and Richard Alfuckin' Alpert doesn't? Alana knows what a candidate is, but Richard Alpert doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is all part of, like, because Richard has his own, like, crisis of faith. That's what Abaterno, one of the greatest episodes of Lost, is about, right? Is, like, Richard loses his faith. What was I doing this whole time? Why was I part of this? Why was I following Jake? He has his own little, like, mini Ben crisis, right? Like, why was I following this asshole this whole time? What was I doing? And it takes, like, you know, his
hot dead wife to like bring him back to you know, his faith. But like it's yeah, Richard should know everything.
Richard should have asked some questions.
Like, why is John Locke getting shown pieces of like dirt and knives and I don't know. It doesn't make
sense. Yeah. That's a good question. Why is Richard's job to figure out if someone's a candidate if he doesn't know what that is?
Wait, okay. That is an interesting question, but I always thought, at least on this rewatch, my interpretation was that the reason why Richard tests John is because of the time loop.
Totally. But like,
not because he's a candidate.
And like, to
so
be
that
the leader
still
of the,
a little bit.
To be the leader of the others, I guess, but like, what is that test? And why didn't he ask John what kind of animal he would be if he could be any kind of animal? You know what I mean?
And did John choose the knife because he was always going to be this?
You can see why Richard gets really mad in a few episodes about this whole situation. Richard ultimately is the one who is demanding to see the org chart.
Yes, that is what Abaterno is. Show me the goddamn org chart of this island. Finally. Mm-hmm. Do we know, like, I've seen Across the Sea several times, but, like, so, like, in theory, does the man in black, like, have a wife in the village or you know, it doesn't have to be marriage, a partner in the village that his mom destroys? Like, is that what happened? Like, he
maybe.
Says he's a life
or is,
there.
Is he talking about... I have not yet rewatched Across the Sea yet, so this could be wrong. My assumption in this episode is when he says, like, I know it's like to lose someone you love. Isn't it the mom?
I mean, that would be really sad, because I would just like for, you know, this... this mother's boy to have, like, because he leaves at one point and he goes lives with the villagers for a while and he's like, I love them, I love the humans, they rule, they're great,
a great party.
I love living with them. And then his mom's like, I will kill all of them so you come back to me. So I feel like he had I would like to see good old Bosch have an episode where he falls in love with a random lady, one of the OG other on the island. You know what I mean?
So. One of the post-Egyptian, pre-American crashes on the island. I guess that's the time period. I don't know. It all gets confusing and weird.
Yeah, the Man in Black's lost years.
The lost years. Oh, lost two.
Get Bosch back.
All right. Lost to, all we know we're bringing back is Titus Welliver. Like, done. I will watch that show.
Okay. So to follow up, you kind of alluded to this question in the column, but I wanted to, like, make it more explicit here in the storm. If Sawyer fell off that ladder, that's no different than, like, a bomb in a backpack, right? Like, that... Like, so then why does Locke save Sawyer? Does he save Sawyer there because Sawyer, he's recruiting Sawyer to help him convince other people like Kate, et cetera, to come with him?
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that there's a utility in having Sawyer, which is not only is he like good and resourceful and can help, you know, I think ultimately he tries to get him to help him with old Chucky Widmore. But also, it makes a good case, like, if you can convince Sawyer, some of these other people, maybe not Jack, but some of these other people might come along. And yeah, the rules are not clearly defined. I mean, what we do know is that the Man in Black can convince other people to kill both Jacob and candidates, because I guess... ultimately, he's the one who sort of sets John Locke off on his path to get killed by Ben, right? By, like, saying, like, you'll have to die. So John goes through all this time thinking that he's going to have to die. And I think even... does he say it to Ben at one point? But he's not directly responsible, but he definitely, like, pushed the boat away from the dock on that situation.
Like, Ben's the knife
right.
in that situation.
Like, he knew that if he just... pushed him in the right direction, Ben would take mm-hmm. care of it. And then literally convincing Ben to kill Jacob. You know, but yeah, I mean, he also seems at the end of this episode to take credit for what happened to John Locke, right? Like when he's talking to Sawyer, he's like, you could be neutral and not participate in this fight and, you know, see what happened, you know, maybe something bad happens to you. It's a nice corporeal form you got there. It'd be terrible if somebody walked by and took it from you after a random accident happened.
Be a real shame. Well, so our understanding is that he's locked in that because Jacob died and the pool turns into Lipton iced tea.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a prophecy. When Jacob hath turned to ash and the pool in the temple has become Lipton iced tea, lo, you shall be locked into whatever body you chose. Pick a good one.
Sure. And he did. I mean, he picked a great one.
He picked a great one. I mean, he's... I might have gone with Christian Shepherd, a classic, but sure, John Locke. John Locke will do.
Or the horse.
Christian Shepherd had no shoes. That's just super inconvenient.
That's my lost concept album.
Christian Shepherd had no shoes.
Yeah, why didn't he pick the horse? Well, I know why, because horses can't climb down cliff ladders. So, you know. Mm-hmm.
That would have been super awkward. But he could have got Kate on the team real fast.
That's true.
I think that in this episode, it reads as Locke would have let Sawyer die in lots of places. Like, he sort of does this, you know, I've got you thing, but then it takes a couple of swings back for Sawyer to really, like, get back over there. I don't think he's, like, actively trying to kill him, because he can't. He can't actively...
I think he's actively trying to save him. Mm. And it's a whole like, see, I'm not going to let you die. Long con. It's the long con. Sawyer's trying to con the devil right now, which is fun. It should be more fun than it is. My memory is that the rest of Sawyer's plot, and I said this last week too, but my memory is the last of Sawyer's plot is not that interesting. The most interesting thing he does is, like, at one point he, like, tells Kate, like, that's not John Locke, or let's get the fuck out of here. That's not John Locke. Like, that's it. Like basically he reveals in a couple episodes from now to Kate, like, oh, I've just been pretending to help mm-hmm. this guy so I could get you to safety, basically. And Claire. Let's get Claire to safety. Let's do it. Sort of thing.
I've come around to the thing you said on the dock.
Yeah, I'm a hero. I'm a big damn hero. I'm Sawyer. Yeah. Jack and Locke and the connection in the afterlife, like, because I was just thinking about it, like, because this is the last, like, Locke episode,
mm-hmm.
but there's the, like, in the end, the whole Jack and Locke, I mean, obviously we see Locke again around, like, the Ben episode and stuff like that when they're teaching at Dharma High and stuff like that, but, like, the Jack and Locke surgery plot line, I don't know, I'm just interested, like, how all of that melds together for you, or do we want to wait until it actually happens to talk about it? I don't know.
Well, I think it's nice and subtle at this point, and it's a good misdirect to, like, have John almost call Jack, you know, because I think for Call Me is that could, you know, it puts it to rest for a while, and then when it comes back, and, you know, the final connection between the two is really, I, as far as I remember, very good.
I like very good. The episode with Ben's eulogy being the same episode that Sideways Ben also steps into John Locke. It's mm-hmm. like felt good about him putting him in the grave, picked it right up as far as John's yeah. concerned. Right in the afterlife.
I love that, like, Professor Ben, Professor of European History Ben, has, like, combed his hair forward, like I don't know,
has a slightly different speaking affect,
slightly different glasses, a little more pretentious, Professor Ben, Professor Linus. Yeah, all right. That's all I had to say. I mean, I don't know what else to put in the storm. Honestly, it is getting harder every week for me to put stuff here. Is there anything we're missing?
Because we're whittling down. I don't think this is the episode to have our really, like, okay, what the fuck is the Jacob Rules episodes quite yet, but we're getting there.
Yeah.
I guess
we're going to spend a couple weeks talking about the Jacob Rules.
Well, I guess, no, here's what we can talk about that we can't talk about in the column. The fact that this is, like, the afterlife, so we can have questions about the afterlife, which is this. Okay, of course John has a good relationship with his dad in the afterlife. Of course, Helen is there. Great stuff. I always have questions about why Ben is there, even though he doesn't like going to the church with them at the end. Like, what? Yeah.
Oh, because isn't it his choice not to go to the church in the end? So yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah, so Eloise is there too. Like, it's yeah. a heaven for people who have met.
But imagine if in heaven you still work at a box company and Randy Nations is still your boss.
Well, I mean, in theory, that's part one of Randy's heaven. So he gets fired out of the box company and goes on to meet his, you know,
does Hurley fire? You said that before. Does Hurley fire him in this episode?
No, I just don't think we follow what happens to Randy. He's just a douche.
I don't think he gets fired from the box company.
I just assume
Hurley, for some reason, is just like really loyal, and he's like, that guy's a douche, but I'm going to still give him a job.
I'm still going to give him power over people.
I'm going to still let him torment people in my box company.
Still let him be a manager. But yeah, I think if we know them, then this is also their afterlife. It's just they don't end up in our church with our losties.
But also, it's like it's a flat circle thing. So everyone's experiencing it like in different. At different points,
right.
mm-hmm. but simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I guess in theory, all humans exist in this afterlife. Maybe.
Yeah, all humans from all time.
From all time,
everyone exists in a 2004. That's how you know you're going to die, is when you're in 2004 again. You've died.
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, man.
Old Navy cargo pants are back.
I'm a freshman in college. I guess that's okay. Maybe 2004 wasn't that bad. It really is the Old Navy cargo pants / like not being able to watch a televised sitcom because it has gay panic jokes still because it's just 2004.
Okay, so according to Jack Bender, sorry, I just looked this up because we were talking about something. According to Jack Bender, the mirror scenes showed the characters figuratively and literally confronting their images and the reflections of themselves. The visual metaphor expressed the flash sideways themes of introspection and also represented how the flash sideways showed what you wish for or what you're scared of. What you wish for or what you're scared of. What you wish for or what you're scared of.
Or both.
So what is Locke... What do you wish for? Being with Helen.
Right.
Right. What you're scared of? Losing Helen.
No, embracing that you're never going to walk again.
Yeah, the acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
But that, especially in the, you get a lot of that with the conversation he has with Rose. Like he's afraid to accept.
Yeah. I guess he does at the end of this episode.
Yeah.
Come on, All David. You're only like two episodes out, I think.
Oh my God. Next week's episode?
Lighthouse?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
David!
Yeah. I know. That's why the Lighthouse is one of my favorite episodes. And that's going to be a lit storm, because we get to be like, what is David here?
Okay, so if, not speaking of David, but of the actual Lighthouse, if this is Jacob viewing people their entire lives... based on inscriptions in a lighthouse, then isn't Quan Jin because it's not Pike?
I mean, sure, but no one's ever confirmed that, so I don't know.
I mean, it's a cave. It's a thing, maybe. Maybe Jacob doesn't care about surnames.
I mean, was it their whole life? Because he only met them at their wedding. So.
He only touched them at their wedding, but he's looking at Jack's childhood home.
We know. Oh yeah.
That's true.
But
we don't understand how Jacob experiences time either.
We really don't.
So.
we missed a mirror shot in this. I'm gonna have this up next week so that we don't miss it. But the smoke monster passes through the barracks and pauses outside the window of the house that Sawyer is trashing. Mm-hmm. Checks out his own reflection in the window. So yeah, I guess I've only really been looking for them in the side universes, but they're in the original timeline too.
Yeah. Next week there's a literal mirror.
Yeah.
Literal magic mirror.
The lighthouse.
In the lighthouse.
The lighthouse is okay. Never mind. We'll talk about the lighthouse next week. The cave. Where's the cave rank on the like stupid artifacts? On the, like, you know, we've got the foot. In my notes, it was like, meanwhile, back in the foot, Alana is doing this. So we got the fucking foot, the temple, the cave,
And next week we're getting the lighthouse. It's just a lot of places.
Yeah. I think the cave actually seems like it makes sense, especially if you assume that it's like the Man in Black's like workshop where he's like tracking the candidates and trying to like figure out who he can recruit. That makes sense. The temple still does not make a lot of sense. And the lighthouse, I mean, we'll talk about it next week. It's a little silly.
I think the cave could have been a great location if it wasn't in the same episode of them trying to explain the candidates. Like, if it was just, like, this mystery... Like, imagine if they had stumbled upon it in a different season, being like, oh, there's a rope ladder to nowhere, like, down. It's like this fucking cave with the loot and all their names in chalk. Great. Great lost mystery.
Yeah.
I love it.
That would have been fun.
But, yeah, this is... It's being paired specifically with a Terry O'Quinn monologue of nonsense. Speaking of, we know the smoke monster lies because he's like, you're protecting nothing on the island.
Yeah, but like, we don't know that.
Well, yeah,
I don't know. Do we believe in the golden light?
What do you mean, do we believe in the golden light?
Like, do we believe that will actually happen if you take the stopper out of the... We don't know. Whose word do we have for that?
Well, you'd have it's to true. Think that Locke believes it, Flock believes it, because if the reality is just that's just the thing that makes him killable, then why would he do it?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, fair enough.
I mean, I that might have come out a little more confrontational than I wanted it to be, no. But I'm confused. I'm confused. As confused as I was the first time I went through this.
Oh, season 6.
Season 6. The way they made the smoke monster not technically lie is technically they never provided any answers. So,
oh, you giveth and you taketh, season 6.
I'm really, really enjoying the sideways this time through.
Yeah.
And it is only going to get more painful as we work our way up to the end. The end I remember actually liking, because at that point the momentum is it's on. But I think up until then, it's a whole bunch of island blah. I don't know. We get some squirrel baby, and there's
it's a lot of island blah. It's a lot of island mush. Some good Hurley stuff, and Abaterno is a good.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but a lot of island mush. But yeah, I mean, next week, fucking Jack Shepherd father. Oh, it's good. All right. Should we call it a day? Should we wrap it up?
Let's. Neil, where are we going next week, just in case they need a reminder?
Oh, yeah. We're going to the lighthouse. It's a Jack episode. The all David's theory is in play. Hurley's breaking shit. It's great.
I think this is my favorite Jack episode.
Oh, wow. All
I
right.
think so. Yeah.
Setting the bar.
Not counting like a premiere or finale where it's like kind of an everyone episode. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The episode where he doesn't chase clanking ice into the jungle without telling anybody what he's doing.
The episode where he doesn't like break up his dad's AA meeting. The episode where he doesn't kind of try to bang a hot Italian lady.
The episode where the island isn't mad at him and gives him appendicitis.
Oh, Jack. All
right. I guess Jacob gave him that appendicitis somehow. Well, why not? Blame Jacob. All right, until we get to watch Jack's childhood home through some reflected glass, where can people find your work around the internet? We'll start this week with Joanna Robinson.
Like, find me on vanityfair.com. I am in full-blown Mayor of Easttown theory mode. Though, these are the final hours of my Mayor of Easttown detective agency, because I get the finale screener tomorrow. So tomorrow I will know
Ooh.
All. But anyway, you can find me on vf.com doing other stuff, I'm sure. Or on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
Well, you know, you can always get me over at thefilmschoolrejects.com and on Twitter at rejects or at One Perfect Shot. And yeah, that's pretty much it for now. I'm also moving, so that's what my life is for the next week at least.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can follow me on Twitter at DA7E. You could also listen to me on the Fighting in the War Room, a pop culture podcast, where this week I talked about Love and the Mask. 1994 is The Mask. A movie for 10-year-old boys that still holds up if you consider it a movie for 10-year-old boys. And here, at the end of this podcast, every week, reminding you to be careful of those rope ladders. Do not fall down.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.